Deutschlandfunk. Corso. Kunst und Pop.
I'm not sure there's really anything else that comprises social life. Because, I mean, the moment everybody agrees on something, then in a way there isn't a kind of any kind of discussion. Whereas we know in practice, really, that people disagree on all kinds of things. And I suppose in the British context, we've had a series of issues that have kind of seriously divided the country. You know, the question of Brexit, for example, the, you know, questions around sex and gender, questions around the North and the South. You know, we have huge divide between the rich and the poor. We have very strong left and right divisions. But I think in Britain, you know, it's really become very, very extreme to the extent that people are kind of breaking off friendships, stopping talking to family members, you know, trying to get people to lose work because they disagree with each other. You know, I mean, it's become very, very strange. And there's a kind of absence of a sort of discussion. So people are not being able to give reasons for why they might support one, you know, politics, one political position or another.
Right. And this is why you basically started this Amity Animosity project, right?
One of the things I realized that was happening, and, you know, it's a very common problem, is, you know, the use of online media has meant that people don't necessarily speak to each other in person. So they take these very polarized positions, but they're not talking face to face. I'm very interested in these terms around friendship, solidarity, comradeship. What do they actually mean? They might be in tension with each other, but it doesn't just mean hanging out with people when they're cool and popular. It means helping people when they're in trouble or they're being accused of something or they're undergoing some kind of crisis. And this was really lacking, yeah.
Do you have any borders? Like, would you really talk to anyone on that project?
Yes, I did. Yes, so I spoke to anybody who contacted me.
So if there was like a super right-wing extremist, you would still talk to them?
Yes.
Why?
Because I think that prejudging people on the basis of what you think they know is a mistake. I think that talking to people about their reasons and about your own is far more useful. I think we get far closer to a kind of, you know, a set of positions that we can all understand. And I think it's possible to change people's minds. I don't think there's any value in ostracizing people and saying, well, I believe this person has a view that is completely so intolerable that I can't speak to them, because that pushes people further and further away and makes them feel far more alienated and isolated from whatever we're calling this social thing.
There is also this weird tendency online to call everyone within the blink of an eye a Nazi or a fascist who, you know, who voices, let's say, conservative or right-leaning politics. And I'm not even talking about, you know, radical beliefs here. So what's problematic about this thoughtless use of words?
If somebody asked you, what's the worst thing you can call somebody? You know, it's going to probably be this word. Right. So we can also see this word in the current context as being rather dissociated in many cases from, let's say, historical Nazism. You know, when people are calling each other fascists, they're not really referring to like Mussolini's doctrine, or they're not really referring to Nazi Germany's, you know, corporatist policies. Do you know what I mean? It's not really a historical referent at all. They're simply saying, I don't like you. But this is, I mean, extremely dangerous, because it also undermines what's specific about, let's say, authoritarian and murderous regimes. It's a kind of overly casual use of this term. Perhaps we are in proper postmodernism now, because there is a kind of collapse of meaning. You know, words become very free-floating, but it really does come down to the definition of certain words. Online life makes it a lot easier to kind of make these words detached and free-floating from what they used to mean. Or, you know, because if people don't really have a material reality, you don't see people before you. You know, people can say anything about who they are and so on. And you know, this is the Gnostic, this is the religious dimension as well. Yeah. You know, people are becoming completely detached from their bodies. You know, this question of identity, you know, we really do live in this regime of identities, you know, where people, you know, what people say they are is more important than how they behave.
There is also this tendency online to cross borders by saying outrageous and provocative things. Like, I had to think of this hashtag campaign, which was men are trash, for example, that was viral for some time. How useful actually are these kind of things in terms of establishing a dialogue between men who want to learn maybe or want to change something and, you know, and people who are interested in men changing maybe?
On the one hand, though, I would say, you know, if free speech or free expression means anything, it's going to include things that are unpleasant, offensive, upsetting. You know, I think that there are no groups that can't be criticized or laughed at, for example. I think when we start saying that you can't laugh at particular groups, you know, then we're in dangerous territory because we're setting up hierarchies of privilege. You know, we're saying, well, we can laugh at these groups and not others. And to come to the second point then, you know, white men have become a massive target, right? A very easy target for these kinds of resentments. Like in the hashtag you mentioned, there was also another one that was even more serious, you know, which was kill all men, you know, which you could say, right, it's a joke. And in a way, of course, it is, right? Because it's not, doesn't correspond to the actual violence in the real world, right? It's not, women, you know, don't tend to go around killing men very often. It's much more the other way around. In a strange way, one has to both defend, like, the form of the aggressive or the unpleasant statement, the possibility of it for everybody, but at the same time, as you say, to actually have a reasonable and complicated discussion about masculinity, good masculinity, bad masculinity, you know, does take time. And in a way, the medium is the message, as McLuhan says, but the medium like Twitter, they're very fast moving. They don't really permit that kind of deep investigation, let's say, into a complicated subject, you know, like how should men behave? What does it mean to be a good man? You know, and there are many good men. So we have a kind of problem of distraction, a generalized distraction, where, you know, these big issues are presented with an urgency, but they're actually much deeper.
Angela Nagel, the woman who wrote Kill All Normies, calls this kind of behavior culture of transgression. You know, that is also tied closely to the concept of counterculture. And she argues, and I think that this is a quote from her book, it might be time to bury the still very young, very modern values of the whole paradigm of counterculture and create something new. But she doesn't say what this newness could be. And I would like to ask you, what do you think? What could this new thing be? Something different than a culture of transgression and counterculture?
I don't know. I have this idea that we need a third summer of love in order to get people off the computers. You know, that people need to put down their phones and go into a field and you know, dance for a bit. So this is my proposed solution. And I think that if people got together in person and talked to strangers, you know, and expressed disagreement in a kind of happy way in nature, this sounds very hippie-ish, I know. But really, you know, how else are we going to kind of like live and talk together?
What you just said with the summer of love, I mean, sure, it sounds hippie-ish, but there is also this nice idea of discourse in it, that people talk to each other. But there is also something in it, and this is what I would like to propose, which is this kind of new thing that might maybe transcend this culture of transgression, is maybe the idea of an ethics of listening.
I mean, I completely agree. I think that we don't have a very good culture of listening. Often in conversations, even in person, there's a kind of battle for who can speak next, you know. There isn't often enough enjoyment that we take in listening to other people. And yeah, so my idea for the third summer of love, which, you know, partly relates to the friendship project, is also, yeah, that there would be a kind of mass collective listening, a kind of psychoanalysis, you know, for everybody, you know, at once.